Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. And you?
I'm good, thank you. So thank you so much for making yourself available for us.
You're welcome.
And how are you? How is my beloved Ireland?
Well, I think we had a very good time in Ireland. It didn't sell quite as many books as I thought we might, but we had a good time anyway. So I think all went a little bit sort of flat in the end with the result, obviously. So with a pub full of unhappy goons, for obvious reasons.
Yeah, I wonder why.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you had fun anyway.
No, we did. We did.
Yeah, Ian Gunner even told me that you're now an honorary Irishman, so
Oh, is
you must have done something right.
that what you said? Yeah, he's a character. Him and his dad were having photos taken, left, right, and center with everybody they could. It was, myself, with my publisher, I don't know why. But there you go. I can understand wanting to have photos with Eddie Kelly, but me and my publisher was a bit far, but there you go.
Oh, well.
They enjoyed it.
They're Irish. That's fantastic. You were in Dublin for the signing of Jordy Armstrong on the wing.
Yeah, we were invited over by Dublin Arsenal Supporters Club. Originally, it was just me and a few books, but it sort of grew because they got the FA Cup replica for the same weekend, so they made a big thing of it, and they were having an auction for the local children's Temple Park Children's Hospice as well. So it was all in a good cause, and just ruined by the football, unfortunately.
Arsenal letting
Yeah.
us down. Speaking of the book, I have a question that a lot of people really want answers to. What inspired you to write a book on George Armstrong from all
Well,
people?
I can't take any credit for the inspiration. I mean, the backstory is very simple. When he passed away so suddenly, I mean, Jill and her father, and obviously Tom and her father, were both very close. And Tom's fiancée, Tom being Geordie's youngest, his son, was expecting the first child. And it sort of dawned on Jill that her future children, because she was engaged to be married, and her brother's children, would never know their grandfather, how great a man he was. So Jill struck upon the idea of sort of creating a memory book. And she asked at the funeral, a lot of the ex-players through the Islington Gazette at the time and through the Arsenal Club, asked people to send in their recollections, both fans and ex-players, people he coached, to send in their recollections and tributes to her father. And she started building quite a collection, but it just got too personal, really, I think, and life took over, and what began never really came to fruition. And it was last autumn when she always goes to the memorial stone at London Colney most years, just to have a quiet moment with her family and some of his closest friends like David Court and Liam Brady and the Gackers. And she went on social media just after that and started tweeting a few photos of her father, and it sort of dawned on her very quickly that there was still a huge amount of love for her father out there. I guess she thought maybe he'd be forgotten, but he obviously wasn't. So she spoke to somebody about maybe doing some blogs with some of the material she'd collected 13 years earlier. And luckily for me, Peter Gunner, June in 1947, said, "If you're going to use anyone, use Dave." So she asked me to follow her. I spoke to her. She said, "This is what I have in mind. I'd like to do a few blogs. Will you help me write them?" And my overwhelming reaction was, "Well, why do blogs when you had an original idea, which is a good one? Why not be true to yourself, Jill, and do what you set out to do, and I'll help you do it if I can." But I also said, if I'm entirely honest, I'm not a professional writer, and I think someone like a John Cross or a Steve Stammers, an Arsenal journalist, would bite off your right arm to write about your father. And she said, "Well, we've spoken about it, myself and my mother and my brother, and we don't want a professional writer, we want a fan. So we want a fan to write the book." So I went to meet them, and it started there, 6th of November last year.
Wow.
So that was it. That wasn't my idea. I can't take the credit for the idea, but hopefully the way we've done it, Jill's delighted with it. So rather than take the sort of conventional biography route, because she already has such a huge amount of raw material. I mean, I opened the folder she gave me the first day. You open it, it's a letter from Arsene Wenger. The next one's Dennis Bergkamp. The next one's Lee Dixon. There's all these people, Dave McKay, all these people that had written in at the time. She still had those letters. And, of course, they were sent to her with the purpose of being a book. So it wasn't as if we had to go back and ask these people's permission, because they'd sent it for that reason.
Yeah.
But the reason it didn't happen then. So just took it from that and started thinking, well, if we've already got these sort of tributes, why try and reinvent the wheel? Why don't I just continue where she started and sort of just try and link together numerous conversations and interviews into something meaningful that took you through this career, rather than just do, and on this day he played this game and he scored this goal, and you know, which would be quite dull. Try and make something that really vibrant and lively as a tribute, which is what we did.
And how did she find the experience of, you know, actually making the book? It wasn't just an idea anymore. She was actually creating it now with you.
Yeah, well, she pretty much handed over to me and said, do what you want. We trust you. So the starting point was that, of course, the people from the 71 team and the early 70s players were, to a large degree, family friends. So she was able to give me numbers for people right at the beginning, like Bob Wilson and Frank McClintock and Liam Brady, who pretty much took me under their wing and helped me. They gave me as many contacts and as numbers as I could think of. So every time I said, well, I've got this idea, they would say, right, here's a few names, here's a few numbers, this is the last telephone number I had, this is the last address you had, and just, well, it just became like an investigation, you know, I was like a private investigator, just going from one person to the next person, trying to thread together, you know, ideas. And every time I had a new idea, I would go off in a different direction. For example, I thought, well, why not, rather than just have Arsenal people's views, why not, you know, have a chapter where I speak to fullbacks who played against, or a chapter where I speak to lots of journalists who reported on him back in the 70s and 60s. So that's what we did, and we just went off at tangents, and then I'd get to bring it all together and try. So it's largely, it's not completely chronological. It starts at the end. I don't know if you started reading it yet, but the first, there's a context chapter that just talks about, you know, him in context, the number of appearances and what it was like in those days playing on those pitches. But then it just goes into starting at the end. So it starts with the thing of when he passed away very suddenly and through to the funeral. And it's very difficult to interview, you know, Marge, his wife, and Jill. But hopefully managed to do that chapter justice. So it starts at the end, and then it sort of takes you largely in a date order from when he, you know, grew up, and then when he came to Arsenal, and, you know, the success in the late 70s, early 70s. And then talks to some of the younger players he was hugely influential on when the team was in transition, like Richie Powell, Julian Brady, Graham Ricks, Frank Stapleton, and they worshipped him, you know. And it became apparent to me quite quickly that I wasn't just dealing with an ordinary guy. You know, he wasn't just a good footballer. You won't find anyone in the whole of the game of football that doesn't love the guy. And, you know, it became apparent very swiftly that was what it's like. And you just had to mention the two words, George Armstrong, and everybody wanted to talk to you. It really was. It was quite intensely powerful. But you speak to the young lads who he coached in the 90s, you know, people like Steve Sidwell and sort of, you know, Kevin Campbell, David Hillier, Stephen Hughes, even the younger generation, the Ashley Cole, the pilot, and that. So they couldn't believe that everywhere they just got off a bus at any ground in the country and everyone would say, hey, where's Geordie? You know, all right, Geordie. Everybody, you know, they couldn't get over the fact that so many people in world football and in English football, everybody knew him. You know, just quite phenomenal. Anyway, I'm chatting too much.
No, absolutely not. I love hearing you speak about him. What I have noticed is not really amongst the fans who've been around for a while, but mostly fans who joined the club a few years after really young during the 90s. They don't really seem to remember a lot about George Armstrong.
No, I mean, it was always, I don't think I was ever going to write a book about George that was going to be a bestseller. You know, I could be critical. I feel quite sad sometimes that the younger fans don't seem to want to know the history and the heritage. And I think I could generalise here, but fans, the global fan base, seem more interested in the history and heritage sometimes than our own UK-based fans.
Yeah.
Certainly if you take through them in Nigeria and in India, Kenya, they're far more fascinated to know everything, the backstory. They're still, you know, hungry for that knowledge. And Geordie was just so much more to Arsenal than just a player, and I try to bring those themes through, what he stood for. You know, that 70s collective team was the Arsenal way, and the Arsenal education was born then, I think, and Geordie stood for that. You know, the young players who he played, they knew that they grew up, and it's continued to this day. I mean, Greg Lincoln never quite made it at Arsenal, but he played many games for Geordie. He's now back at the academy, I think, as the under-13s coach, and he spoke very eloquently about, it's not just about football, it's about the way you behave, it's the way you interact with people, and it's just the Arsenal way and the Arsenal education. And I think, you know, you always hear those phrases and you think, what do they actually mean? But this book brings it to life, I think. If you follow it through with the interviews, it just brings the pure essence of what it means to be an Arsenal man. You know, and Geordie was, you know, absolutely the essence of what it is to be an Arsenal man. You know, it's quite. I mean, I saw him play twice. I mean, my first season was his last.
Oh.
76, 77. So it's not like I didn't see him play at all. I saw him on telly and I saw him live, but I was 10, 11. You know, so I didn't really understand. I mean, I knew from older fans that he was their hero. You could hear his name even in his last season. He was one of the names that was always sung first. I mean, and it was that work ethic and that sort of never say die attitude that fans love. You know, that's why fans would love a Ray Parlour, for example. You know, they love a Sanchez at the moment because no one else seems to be putting in the same work ethic. Well, that was Geordie in 1970. You know, but it really comes through, hopefully.
I hope
so, anyway. I hope the younger fans will really, because there's a lot of people that they will recognise in the book as well. I mean, you know, Martin Keown in the book, Bruce Bergkamp, Lee Dixon, Tony Adams, you know, David Hillier, Kevin Campbell. These are players who've won stuff with us in the last 20 years, and many of them under Wenger, and they still worship the guy.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, we already discussed it a little bit, and I told Jill on Twitter earlier that my grandfather was a massive, massive fan of George. And honestly, I would not have known about him if it wasn't for my grandfather.
No.
And my grandmother has actually read your book already. She ordered it, and she read it, and she wanted me, well, actually, she demanded, because I told you, that you would have made my grandma a very, very proud fan with that book. So,
oh, well.
I think you wrote it really, really well. Moving back to our own fans when it comes to him, do you know that our fans mentioned the time when we won the title at Spurs in Spurs
71 or 2004?
No, 71. And I was talking to a few friends just to, you know, see how many of them would know who Armstrong was. And they could name quite a few players in that Arsenal team, and it was so weird to me that one of the very few players they could not name was actually Armstrong.
And yeah, if you ask anybody at that time, and hopefully that comes through, you know, when you the chapter where I've interviewed sort of people who played against him, you know, they would say it was like playing, if you're playing against Arsenal with George Armstrong on the team, it's like playing against 12 men.
Yeah.
And with a manager, you know, every manager, you know, from Billy Wright, once he got in the side, you know, through to Bertie Mee, he was the first man on the team sheet, there's no question in anyone's mind. And people like Frank Pintock and Bob Wilson will tell you that. You know, he was the player. Unfortunately, you don't have records of assists in 1971, but, you know, but most people would say he was probably 2/3 of the goals were either directly or indirectly as a result of something George Armstrong did. You know, whether it was setting up play or whether it was 9 times out of 10, it was just an accurate cross, but that was the way we played, and he was integral to everything we did. And also, the other thing, just the 1971 is one thing, but the year before, we won our first trophy in 17 years.
Yep.
You know, everybody said he was man of the match in the second league against Anderlecht. You know, everyone who interviewed, I mean, I spent the weekend with Eddie Kelly, you know, John Samuels, Frank McClintock, Bob Wilson, everybody said that was his finest hour. That, and if you speak to some of the fans who you would chat to on Twitter now, like, you know, Kat Sask or Des Powell or speak to any of these guys who were at that game, they will tell you. Gary the Goon 56, they will all tell you he just carried Arsenal that night. He just was everywhere, absolutely everywhere. And playing in conditions that you would not, a Sunday league side would have a game postponed today. You know, the rumour is, well, Eddie Kelly told me that Bertie Mee, it was muddy anyway, but Bertie Mee watered the pitch such that the end of it wouldn't be able to play on it. Anyway, they were 3-1 down from the first leg. It was a two-legged Fairs Cup final, UEFA Cup. And we won through playing on that pitch, but most players couldn't have played on it, but he was just as accurate. I mean, he could cross it, you know, onto a matchstick from a perfect surface or from a puddle. It didn't make any difference to George.
Fascinating. You don't see players like that. Well, you don't see a lot of players like that anyway.
That's why I did the chapter where I asked to try and appeal to the younger fan, getting back to that subject. I tried to do that chapter where I asked people I interviewed, you know, if George was playing today, how much would he be worth? But also, who would you liken him to? And there are certain names that came through a lot. You know, Beckham was one and Brian Giggs was another. But it's sort of, when you actually ask people, even people who knew him and played hundreds of games with him, they found it difficult because there were no box-to-box wingers in 1971. It was just him. You know, a winger when he's playing in the 60s was just an attacking player who got kicked and started crying. I mean, George was just totally different. And Billy Wright changed the whole way the team played to accommodate. So he had one box-to-box winger in Geordie and then either a Johnny McLeod or Alan Skirton on the other side. And that actually followed the team through because George Graham did it. you know, with Marwood, you know, he had Marwood at a flying wing on one side and Rocastle at the box wing on the other. And even Wenger, in the first, you know, the first sort of big title years in 98, and he had a flying wing on the left in Mark Overmars and a box-to-box wing on the right in Ray Parlour. And so you can take that, what Geordie started through three generations of success, you know, the 70s and then with George Graham and then with Arsene Wenger, each of that 4-4-2 had a flying winger, an attacking winger and a box-to-box winger. And Geordie started that trend. You know, it's so powerful what he did and how it runs through, even through to Wenger.
It's quite impressive, honestly.
It really is. It's only when you start living and breathing it, as I have done for the last year, that, you know, when you start listening to people, you just sit there in awe, you know, of the guy. Quite amazing man. And not just a player, but a man as well. A really, really honourable, you know, thoughtless individual that just put everybody before himself. You know, never. All the journalists said, they would start to say, oh, yeah, he had a really good game, George. And, you know, you say, oh, yeah, yeah, but what about Peter Simpson? Or what about Peter Story? He never wanted to take any personal plaudit. He just couldn't deal with it. He always wanted to praise his teammates. And it was the same with the players he coached. It was always about everyone else. It was never about him. He just was glad that he got up every day and was able to play football and get paid for it. That was it. Came through, you know. Bobby Charlton was the same with that generation. David Beckham would be the same, you know, despite the slightly difference in the currency he might be taking on for football, but he still, he would have done it for nothing. You know? Gascoigne, people like that, they just want to play football. And that's what Geordie was like.
Now, if you had to describe Armstrong to the younger generation, teenagers now who are on Twitter, could you think of just a few words, what would you say?
Oh, crikey. Well, you know, the ultimate team player, you know, ran for 90 minutes and, you know, never stopped. And was always looking forward to create. He would get back, he would help his defence, but then he'd be looking forward. He was always looking forward and he just never, you know, and he never tried to elaborate. You know, he never tried to beat a man just for the sake of beating a man. It was always about when's the right time to cross, how quick can I get the cross in the box, just get it in the box. And unfortunately, you know, the obvious comment I'm going to make is, don't we all wish that sometimes Arsenal would play like that today? Just get the ball in the box. You know, but then when Arsenal do that now, when you see, like, the Anderlecht game away, both goals from just getting the ball, you know, low or hard crossing, you know, and it's not a rocket science, you know. If you get the ball wide and you're coming in from behind the defence, it's harder to defend against rather than playing in front of us, you know, like we play in front of the defence all the time. They just crowd us out and they just defend this in a way, you know, whereas if you get behind, it's harder for defenders, and that was what Arsenal under George Armstrong Zero was all about, you know, just get it to George and get the ball in the box. And I wish you'd do it now.
So. I totally agree with you on that one. The book's been published, and we had a lot of attention for your book in the publishing office on the podcast.
Yeah.
You've done quite a few times. You've been to the Tollington, you've been to the Gunnersbach, you've been to Fibre.
Shamelessly promoting myself, yes.
I know. You just come back from Dublin. Well, what is the overall reaction you receive from fans who, like, show up at those signings?
Very good, very positive. I mean, there's a lot of people, certainly the second one we did, the Arsenal Sports Club, but most of the members in there are of that generation, and they just wanted to come in and talk about Geordie and talk to his teammates who were there signing, you know, speak to Frank, speak to John Radford, speak to Eddie Kelly. They just love it. And they're still Arsenal men, and the fans recognise that, you know. There's a massive warmth to that era. And those people that still stand you know, they want to represent Arsenal. You know, look at the tours on the day of the pitch. John Radford's still there. Charlie George is still there. You know, Frank McClintock's there every match day. Bob Wilson's there every match day. Mm-hmm. They just are Arsenal, and that's the warmth you get from the older generation who remember it that way. I think the younger generation are just quite fascinated what the fuss is about. But hopefully more younger fans will read it.
Yes. He deserves all the credit and even more than he's getting already. You've also been backed up, as you already mentioned, by former Gunners and colleagues and friends of Arsenal.
Very much so.
Yeah.
And more to come.
amongst others, this is a name that the younger generation might actually recognise. I believe Seth Rice also helped with the book or with the signing even.
Yeah, he came to the second signing. He wanted to be at the first. And for any Arsenal fans who haven't seen me on Twitter, or he is well. He is very well. He had to have another operation recently, which was caused by the big operation he had for cancer, which is, he's been given all clear, and he had a double hernia operation recently. But he's fit, fighting fit, and very well. He goes to the gym two or three times a week, he tells me. So he's in great form. And, you know, it's one of those awkward things, because in that lull between Bruce Rioch going and Wenger coming, there were two people who took over the running of the first team, and that was George Armstrong and Pat Rice. And it was Pat Rice who, wanted to, Geordie was never the sort of person who would push himself forward. I mean, this isn't a criticism of Pat Rice in any way, but Pat Rice obviously pushed himself forward and became the sort of the manager, if you like, and George was his assistant. So, you know, there, if it had been the other way around, it might have been George Armstrong who'd been Arsene Wenger's assistant, who can say, you know.
I love both.
But it was George Armstrong who, and Pat will tell you no different, when they were losing, I can't remember where they were playing, they were losing badly, and Pat Rice hadn't played Patrick Vieira, even though he'd been signed, obviously, before Wenger arrived.
Mm-hmm.
And to put it, I won't try and do a Geordie accent, but they were half time and they were losing, and George Armstrong turned around to Pat and said, let's bloody get the big man on. And so, and the rest is history. So, George Armstrong gave Patrick Vieira his debut, and we all know what happened after that.
It's actually funny you mention that, because that is the story that Pat Rice has told me.
Yeah, well, he did it, or Geordie did it.
No, he didn't do that. That was, according to Pat, that was Geordie when he told me.
Yeah. No, absolutely, which is great. Yeah. They were very, that team spirit they had in 1971, you know, just goes on. I mean, there's a bit in the book where the funeral, where the whole of the 71 side. I mean, there was only, obviously, Ray Kennedy, because of his Parkinson's, and Eddie Kelly happened to be moving house that day, but every other player from the squad was at the funeral. And Tony Adams came over to them and said, you know, they were absolutely pouring the rain, and all had umbrellas, and were standing around the grave where Geordie, being a Catholic, and obviously it was a coffin, and they were standing there paying their respects. And Tony Adams came over and just said, along the lines of, you know, it's amazing what you guys have got. We'll never have this. Look at my team. And it wasn't the Christians of his team, but obviously they were a multinational side, and you were never going to have that togetherness.
Right.
And he said, I really envy you guys what you've got. And then Charlie George just turned around and said, yeah, Tony, but this is fucking Geordie. You know, it didn't matter what happened. We were always going to be here for Geordie. You know,
incredible.
Yeah. But they still miss him. People like Pat and Bob, particularly, and so Vic Akers, actually, of all the people at the club, Vic and George were very, very close at the end. Vic really misses them all the time. People like David Court, Liam Brady. Liam Brady's godfather to Gil's eldest. And Steve Burtonshaw, the other old coach, is godfather to her daughter. So there's a lot of relationships that were built in that sort of late 60s, early 70s that endure to this day.
Just a short recap for the somewhat younger fans. Could you, in a few words, explain why Armstrong passing away was such a massive hit for so many people?
Well, I mean, in the same way you don't get it today very often. You'll have your Stephen Gerrard and your Jamie Carragher and your Tony Adams, but in those days, even then, to play for one club from 1962 to 1977 and play 621 games, 605 of which I think it was he started, you know, in pitches that were, you know, half the time, like Donkey Fields, with only one substitution. So, you know, he actually played more minutes than, you know, you can even imagine on awful pitches. And in a way that, you know, he gave and expended more energy than everyone else. And I'm not just saying that, they would all say the same. He's adjusted. One minute he would be, you know, creating an attack and the ball would break down and he would be back supporting his fullback. And he did that, you know, box to box for 90 minutes for 17 years. I mean, but not just, you know, he wasn't just a workmanlike player, he was a very, very skillful player. And most people would say, in any other era, probably would have won 40 or 50 caps for England, but it was just unfortunate that he was playing at his peak in an era where Sir Ralph Ramsey didn't pick any wingers from 66 to 74. And that's really unfortunate, because he could have easily played inside forward or you know, further inside, but Ramsey, a lot of other players would say Ramsey had a bit of a problem with Arsenal. I don't know if that's true. I can never find out. But some of the players, certainly John Radford, Peter Simpson would say that.
Wonderful.
Just, he was, yeah, well. But so he was just, you know, it would be like for someone who remembers Ray Parler at his peak, you know, maybe from Ray Parler's his peak when Wenger really turned him into a quality pro. So, you know, we're only talking in 97 to 2002, maybe 2003. Ray Parler, I mean, he played more games in the Premiership for Arsenal than any other player. But he was at his peak like that for 5 or 6 years. Geordie was at his peak for Arsenal for 15 years. Week in, week out, never delivering a poor performance, never leaving anything on the pitch. And that's why, you know, the younger fans, you know, they probably haven't seen that at Arsenal. You know, and the older fans just, they love it. They will always love him for it. You know, that's all you can say, really. It just is. We haven't seen the like, you know. We haven't seen the like of him since, I don't think. Not for such a sustained period. And unfortunately, some people leave like Dave O'Leary, and who, you know, not for me. Dave O'Leary will always be a hero as a player, but there's certain things he said and done, you know, after he's finished playing for Arsenal that, you know, haven't endeared himself necessarily to Arsenal fans. And the same way, unfortunately, and not for me personally, but again, some people don't understand Tony Adams. Either way, you know, some of the outbursts now, but he never had that. So they're the only two people who played more games for Arsenal than George Armstrong. Lee Dixon summed it up in the Ava, the best quote, one of the best quotes in the book when I was interviewing Lee Dixon. He said, at the end of his last game against Everton in 2002, someone came up to him and said, well, Lee, if only you, you know, if you played three more games, you would have been third in the all-time appearance list. You would have overtaken George Armstrong. And he said, Dave, I thought for a minute, and I said, you know what? Being fourth behind Geordie's good enough for me. I was nearly crying. I was nearly crying when he said that.
Yeah.
And then he elaborated. He said, honestly, Dave, I mean, I would have played if Arsenal had asked me to play. Of course I would. But if I'd realised, I wouldn't have wanted to. I really didn't want to.
That's incredible.
Not want to overtake George Armstrong. And we're talking about one of the legends of the game for Arsenal, Lee Dixon, as well. I mean, let's face it.
Yeah.
You know, unbelievable.
I believe John Armstrong had an exact total of 500 league caps, only domestically, for Arsenal, if I'm correct. I'm not completely sure.
Yeah.
Unbelievable, yeah. Man.
Yeah, it really was. And you know, even the week he passed away on the Monday, legend has it, but I think it's more the legend that Arsene Wenger sort of joked with him that if you keep on running around like this, I'm going to have to play you on Wednesday night in the League Cup. And obviously, even then he was playing, you know, the youth team, and quite a lot of Geordie's players played in that game on the Wednesday when he died on the Monday. But the joke was, you know, I'm going to play you, Geordie. Yeah. But he was that fit, still at 56.
Unbelievable.
So it's one of those, you know, horrible twists of fate. But there you go. As the family said, you know, all you can say is, you know, they all know if he could have chosen to go in any way, it would have been on the pitch with his boys. So.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. And fitting that the George Armstrong Memorial pitch will be there forever, as long as Arsenal stay at Colney anyway.
Absolutely. And, yeah, they better stay there anyway. It's only for that reason alone. All right.
Is there anything else? As you probably gathered, I could talk all day about it.
Yeah, so can I. So, well, I like listening to you. It actually fascinates me because the way you speak about him is the same way my grandfather told me about him. So it's quite emotional for me too. Moving back and away from emotions and stuff, can we expect more books from you in the future?
I can't tell you because I have to shoot you. I have something that I'm potentially working on that if it comes off, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's not something that I ever set out, but now I've done it and I've enjoyed doing it. And I've got a style that I think suits the ability that I've got, which isn't much. But, you know, the conversational style, let's face it, Ava, if you're writing a football book, you don't have to write a novel. But it's nice to write it well. And I think I've settled on a style that I like the research. I've got a history degree. I like doing the research. You know, that's what I do. But I think linking it together in a conversational style is a style that suits my ability, which, as I say, you know, is capped out at a certain level. So I've got something in mind, yeah, that will be of a similar style, and also about an Arsenal player, but it's not finalised yet.
Keep us updated. Keep me updated.
I will.
Now that the book is out, have you gone back to blogging?
Well, I lost, my marriage would have broken down had I been blogging as well as trying to write a book, so You know, I get enough grief for tweeting about Arsenal and talking about Arsenal and going to see Arsenal, let alone writing a book and writing blogs. But I have written a few since I've finished the book, but I'm still finding that the book's taken a lot of time. And mm-hmm. I'm not one of these, this isn't a criticism of anyone else, but I can only blog when I have an original idea. I'm not one of those people who can blog to order, and I hugely admire people who can, and I hugely admire people like Yogi and Chris at Suburban who manage to do it with such quality every single day. You know, I just write when I have an idea. And so if I have three ideas a week, I will write three blogs. But I haven't happened for a long time. So, and also it's the inspiration is largely negative rather than positive, so I probably prefer not to write the blog than write it some of the time. But no, I will be. On one nil down, 2-1 up, yeah, I will be. But also Gunnerstown takes a lot of my time coordinating that and getting people to write for that. That's not me writing, but it's still my website. So.
Yeah.
As
yeah.
you know, Paul does absolutely nothing.
That's not true. Well, you know, he appears on the podcast every now and then.
Yeah. And he's not coming over now either. So,
he's not.
He can't. He's leaving the house the day after.
So
the ticket, his ticket for the 26th against Dortmund has gone to a worthy cause in Anna. My lovely friend Anna from Russia is coming over for that one instead. So.
I love him.
And I don't know, means I've got a Man United ticket spare as well. Oh no, I think he's given that to someone actually. Paul's given that to someone.
Sorry.
Yeah, so I think he'll be over in the spring.
I hope so. It'll be time to meet him. Rounding this up, I believe you have one more signing coming up on the 22nd of November at Highbury Corner, is that correct?
Yeah, that is. Although I gather I'm almost sort of speaking at the Arsenal Independent Sports Association evening on Monday. Bill for that at the Emirates with Mark Pinella is on, and then myself talking about the book on the 20th for the Arsenal Independent Sports Association. 22nd is at Highbury Corner with one or two major celebrities who I've not yet used, who I can exclusively reveal will be Bob Wilson and Martin Tyler.
Oh, damn. Oh.
Yeah, and Martin Tyler, a brilliant contribution to the book. Absolutely loved Geordie to bits. Loved him. So he's just going to commentate on the game, so he's going to come over for an hour to chat to everyone with Bob Wilson. I gather that, I think Paul at Highbury Corner's got a theme in mind for that one, in that he's going to get some younger fans in there asking questions of Jill, like what it was like growing up living with Geordie.
Yeah.
So that'll be a little bit different, I think. And there's a possibility that there's one more guest might come on that day as well, which is probably 70%, but Gary Lewin might be coming as well, and Gary was, of course, there on the pitch, kept him alive to the hospital such that the family could see him before he passed away. So Gary's quite keen to be involved, and he was wonderful in the book. So.
I am so going to see if I can get a day off just so I can make it.
Well, yeah. And then we'll have a lovely afternoon, and then we'll probably lose to Man United as we all know. Think positively.
Their defence is not that good. Our defence is not that good. We both have an incredible attack, and I don't know.
I keep hearing we've got an incredible attack, and we've scored very few goals, and one person scored them all. I'm not so sure about that, but there you go.
Well, we've got one incredible player. I mean, they've got the grey and not so very nice person, and they've got Shrek.
Yeah, indeed. Well, I did write the blog the week after. I did write my famous blog the week after Van Persie left, saying it was the right decision to sell him, and statistically revealing why, that only one person over the age of 30 had ever had their best season in the Premiership, in the whole history of the Premiership, and that was Drogba in 2010. Not a single centre-forward ever got better after their 29th year.
Well,
and RVP was no different. There you go.
Come on, excellent. Now, your publisher is Legends Publishing, or they are publishing your book, and people can order it from their website, which is legendspublishing.net. You can just search for the book. It's not really that difficult. There will be a link on our website as basically every week now. Do they deliver abroad too? This is a question from an international fan.
Yeah, well, yes. This is literally a subject of ongoing conversations all the time. Which is why it's great working with a small publisher, because it's very collaborative. You know, we work as a team. So I've set up deals with Arsenal Australia, bulk order. You and my Arsenal are doing it in America for me. I've just sent a batch to, we just sent a batch to Denmark Arsenal this week. I'm talking to Sweden Arsenal, France Arsenal took a supply of books from us. So if we can do a bulk order and send them to somebody who can then sell them locally in their own country, that's one way we're doing it. But for the longer haul stuff, like India, Kenya and Nigeria, which I'm really massively keen to do, we are now currently exploring print-on-demand paperback in those countries. So we'll either go to paperback earlier, such that we can start satisfying demand in those countries, or we'll set up local deals such that they can be printed locally and distributed locally. So I don't know if that answers everything, but we are exploring every angle. But from a publisher's point of view, obviously they want to maximise, you know, the hardback, you know, initial print run first. But if we're not ignoring it, and I'm stressing to them all the time how important it is, particularly Kenya, Nigeria and India, to be honest. They are the big three for me.
That I really want to get talking about it, and they can't read it.
Yeah. Well, a few have. I mean, some people have paid. You know, I mean, it's £12 to post to India, one book. But, I mean, some people have paid it. And some people, you know, ordered initially straight away from America as well. So we have been sending them around the world. I mean, Europe's quite easy. I'm saying about £3 or £5.
We do have incredible fans.
Yes,
some of them. At the moment, they're all in a bit of meltdown, but usually they're all lovely.
Yeah. I mean, I think, to be fair, I mean, there is a degree of, and I'm not being naive about this, but there's a degree of, I would say, we'll support him. And hopefully when they read the book, they'll realise they're not, it was a good read anyway, but there is definitely a degree of, well, you know, we followed Dave's blog for 3 years, so he's doing a book, we should buy it because we like Dave's writing, rather than we want to find out about George Armstrong, but hopefully that'll evolve. I'm very grateful that people are doing that, don't get me wrong. But I'd rather they wanted to read it because they want to find out about the Arsenal way and the Arsenal education and about Geordie.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you very much for asking.
Yeah, you're absolutely welcome. It was supposed to happen a few weeks ago, but I'm still happy that I got to talk to you about this.
Well, you are. I mean, I was asked cast up in on. Everyone else has been talking about it, but you're the second person who's actually had me on. So.
Oh, thank you.